I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for another episode of It's All About Food. And we are live here on January 29th, 2013. I'm in the studio here in Manhattan, and it was fun walking out to the studio today. When you're dressed for 20 or 30 degree weather, 45 degrees feels really, really comfortable and nice. It's a nice day today, and it's great to get out in it. All right, food is so important, and I want to know, how did we get so detached, so separated from where our food comes from? How is it that most of us don't have a clue what's in the food we eat and don't even care? How did it come to this? And how did we get so far away from what is fresh and natural and delicious? I don't have the answers to those questions, but we're going to talk about something really, really basic today. Fruit. And yet fruit has so many different delicious, scandalous, romantic, criminal aspects to it, and we're going to get right to it. I'm going to bring on my first guest, Adam Gollner. He's the author of The Fruit Hunters, A Story of Nature, Obsession, Commerce, and Adventure. His writing appears in the New York Times, Gourmet, Bon Appetit, Orion, The Globe, and Mail, Maclean's, and Good Magazine, among others. Welcome to It's All About Food, Adam. Okay, so we're going to wait for Adam for a moment, and while we do, I'm going to talk about some of my memories with fruit, because a lot of things that happen in this wonderful, wonderful book, The Fruit Hunters, that Adam wrote, I really related to. For example, I think there's something really primal about eating food that is really fresh. What I mean by freshly harvested, freshly picked. And maybe some of us have lost it, but I know that when I have an opportunity to fresh food, there's something really deep inside me that gets really excited. Adam, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hi, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I loved reading your book, really underlined, loved reading your book, The Fruit Hunters.
Thank you.
I don't think I'm a fruit hunter, but I do have some passion about fruit. And one of the things that excited me was how you described certain experiences that I've had with fruit so perfectly. And, you know, you want to think, I guess, that you're unique, and I realize I'm not. But some of them were really interesting, and I'll bring them up sometime along this program. But what I was just talking about was when I was young, maybe at about 11 years old, we moved into a new house, and the backyard and beyond hadn't been developed. And there were woods and blackberry bushes everywhere. And I think they were blackberries, not black raspberries, but I don't know anymore. And, yes.
Where did you live? Where was it?
Long Island, New York.
Wow.
And they were everywhere, and I was just... Well, to start with, it was amazing that I was allowed to just roam the woods and nobody knew where I was or where I was going. I don't think parents would do that often anymore. But I would just pick tons of them, and I just felt... it just was just so magical to have free fruit just growing for me to pick until I had enough. What a concept.
Yeah, that's beyond a concept. That's just the most incredible thing. I mean, that is a universal childhood experience, I think. I think that even though yours is particular to you, I think many kids have these moments in nature with fruits. And I think that those moments are amazing, and they mark us. And most of us have some story like that. It may not be with blackberries. It may be with some totally different exotic fruit, depending on what part of the world people are in. But yeah, I mean, I just that feeling that you're describing is magical. That feeling was really what inspired me to write this book, that feeling.
Yeah, well, I had a couple more, and I'm just going to get them all out, and then I'm going to get more out of you. But I went to Costa Rica in 2004, I think, and really fell in love. And I fell in love in the undeveloped areas, not the touristy, Americanized areas, but the undeveloped areas where the trees are just pregnant and bloating with ripe, luscious fruits, mango. It depends on the season, of course, and what would be dropping all over the place. And I thought, I want this. And I ultimately ended buying property there because I just was overwhelmed with all of these juicy, sweet things that I had never, some I knew and some I had never seen before. It was just a paradise, Eden.
For sure, for sure. I mean, that's another lovely story. That I feel like that's a lucky story. That's a lucky story for a traveler. That's one of the great delights of travel, is to end up in some altered state on another part of the planet and surrounded by fruits you've never imagined could possibly exist. But, wow, that's a great part of being an adult.
Well, it brought back the child in me in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's like a direct connection.
Now, you just brought up altered state, and you've brought that up a number of times in your book when you talked about fruitarians and breatharians and different people that followed a path that had to do with fruit, and ultimately some of the fruit was hallucinogenic, but fruit, some kinds, can lead you to a different state of mind.
Yeah, I think that they can. I mean, there's a lot of possible ways in which you can do that. I mean, there's neurochemical ways. As you said, there's hallucinogenic fruits, there's toxic fruits, there's fruits that can kill you. There are fruits that are lethal out there, and there's fruits that just kind of unlock certain molecular pathways in your brain that are maybe exciting and maybe terrifying. I mean, yeah, there's a whole weird thing there. I think what I was excited about most of all wasn't something quite as psychoactive, mm-hmm. but more the sort of things that you described in those two stories, that sense of discovery and the sense the fact that this stuff just comes out of the planet is so unexpected and mind-blowing, and it tastes sweet. And I mean, I think of, can I tell you a little story that your blackberry story reminds me of?
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, as you were saying it, I just totally had a flashback to my own childhood, which is we had a kind of woods next to my home as well, and we also had a vacant lot on the other side. And I remember, you know, roaming around the woods all the time. And I also remember once just kind of hanging out on the vacant lot. There was a trampoline there, I think. We played on this trampoline. But what I remember is that one August, the whole vacant lot became covered in wild strawberries, little small, like we'd been playing on that grass all summer, and then all of a sudden there were wild, like the grass was full of wild strawberries. And what a crazy thing, you know. And you just even as an adult, I think, to see that is a sense of, you know, marvel and wonder and astonishment.
Natural candy.
As a kid, you just can't believe that the world could be anything better.
You know, it's like natural candy, and you had a great line in the book. You had a lot of great lines in the book, but Willy Wonka has nothing on Mother Nature.
Oh yeah.
All those crazy candies Willy Wonka created in his candy shop, and yet all of the fruits that you described in the book don't hold a candle to those little concoctions he made up.
Yeah, his are pretty marvelous, but I mean, it's like there's a certain kind of, I mean, I guess it depends, you know. Maybe some people would find man-made creations more interesting than what nature came up with. But I think most people just don't realize what nature came up with, because most of that stuff is not available for sale and is not in our supermarkets, and people have never come across it and they just don't know about it. They just don't know it exists. So that's another thing I think this book does, is it says, do you realize there's so much stuff out there that we've never heard of? Because I didn't realize that when I started the book. You know, I had no idea. And then I learned about them, and to me, they are so much more fascinating than anything we could put together with our minds and our machines and our technology. I mean, how could we ever come up with something like a durian?
Well, okay, you mentioned durian, and I have to admit that I was on an all-raw food diet for about 2 years. First, I'm a vegan, and I'm still a vegan, and I will be for whatever. I'm committed to that. But I tried all raw food for about 2 years, and I felt like I was going to be ostracized from the community because I did not like durian.
Well, where did you eat it?
I think I might have had some in Costa Rica. I'm not sure. But I've had, you know, we get the frozen variety here in the United States because we can't get fresh, and I would have the result of a defrosted frozen durian. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gross. I think that's gross, personally. But I think that if you go to Singapore or Malaysia, Borneo, Thailand, and you have a durian there, it's not gross. It's amazing. It's a good thing. And Alfred Russel Wallace, the guy who discovered the theory of evolution at the same time as Darwin, he said, way back then, he said that durian is something that's worth a trip to the Far East to experience. You know, it's worth going there just to try a durian. And I'd say the same is true today. Like, it's a fruit that isn't made for transporting around the world. And most fruits aren't. Most fruits are made to be appreciated at a certain moment, at a certain height of ripeness, at a certain place, at a certain time. And that's part of the reason the book is about fruit hunters. It's about people who are trying to have that experience, and we can have that experience in our backyard as well. But it's pretty rare that we have that experience in a grocery store.
The other story that really blew my mind was when you were talking about the Mara des Bois strawberry in France. I was in France a few years ago in the Bordeaux region visiting a friend, and we went to the local market in the morning, and I bought a strawberry, and it was exactly as you had someone describe it in your book. It was the most fragrant, incredible, delicious experience, and it must have been one of those.
Yeah. Very possible. You do see the Mara des Bois in France a lot, and man, those are when you have a good one, because they're not all. That's kind of the beauty about them. They're not all the same. But sometimes in a box you'll get a couple that are just like perfect. And I don't even know. I for some reason for me they make me think of Dimetapp, like that medicine, that cough medicine. Like there's something like there's this weird grape thing in it, there's no point trying to compare it to things, because it really is something you can only understand by eating yourself. And that's part of the fun of the book is trying to come up with ways of making people feel like they're in some way aware of what you're speaking about when they can't really be. I mean, there's no way to tell somebody what a pineapple is like if they've never had a pineapple. Like, you can say what it's similar to, but they'll never really know unless they taste it themselves. And that's something I saw firsthand with the miracle fruit. Like, trying to explain it to people, they just didn't. They never get it, really.
Now, this is the fruit that you eat, and it doesn't taste like much when you eat it, but then afterwards it makes really sour foods taste sweet?
That is that one. And I remember, like, probably the best example of this. I mean, it's like this always. You kind of talk about it. You're like, it's a little red berry. It looks like kind of the size of a small olive, but it's red. It has a pit. You bite into it. You swish it around. You spit out the seed. And then you eat sour things, and they become transformed into sweetness. Like, they taste very, very sweet. And, you know, you tell that to people, and they're like, oh, well, I kind of think I understand what you're saying, but You know, they don't really have any idea what you're talking about until they try it, and their mind is blown. It's always the same thing. And I remember doing this one interview. I think it was the first interview for the book. It was for a show called Democracy Now.
Oh yeah,
with Amy Goodman.
Amy Goodman. We love Amy Goodman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she, I think it's on YouTube, and you know, if you want to go see what I'm talking about, it's amazing, because she, you know, she was kind of like, all right, what are you talking about? You know, kind of, you know, no idea what you're talking about, and then she tried it, and she was just like, why didn't you say that? Why didn't you tell me what you were talking about? You know, it's just people cannot get it unless they try it, and... Yeah, anyways, that's part of the fun of writing that book.
I can talk about food all day, and I do. And I love food, and I love good food, and I love whole plant foods when they're really fresh. And you can really experience what nature intended. But there's a lot more to this book. And there's trade barriers and smugglers and seed registries. There's so many little things I wanted to touch on. Guano wars. And if you want to know what that's about, you'll have to read the book, because I don't think it's an appropriate... No, it's about, I guess, what was it, the 1800s or something, where people were shipping bird poop in order to fertilize their fields?
Yeah, fertilizer. That's it. I mean, my favorite fertilizer is the remains of mummified cats from Egypt. They brought boatloads of cats to Britain from Egypt when they'd excavated the pyramids, and just, you know, kind of ground up the mummies and spread them on fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's probably some value to that. There's probably nutrients in them that are good for the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... May I ask a question? I'm not sure how long we're supposed to do the interview for, but I could.
We have about 10 more minutes.
Okay, good. Shall I tell you another story?
Yeah,
about mummies?
I love stories.
In the next book I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
I have a book coming out in August. It's my new book. It's called The Book of Immortality, and it's about the idea of immortality, and that's an idea that the fruit hunters explores, fruits being symbols of eternal life in religions. And I remember as I was finishing the book, I was like, what is eternal life? Like, what is that? Mm-hmm. Where did we get that idea? You know, what is that? Is it an idea? Is it a thing? And so, you know, that became the start of a new book, which is sort of a continuation in some ways of The Fruit Hunters. And, I'm just in the final moments of copy editing it right now, and I was looking over this one passage that connects to the mummy, the mummified remains being spread as fertilizer. People also took that as a kind of anti-aging pill in several hundred years ago in Britain. Like, people would actually eat the leftovers of mummies, like the ground up.
Mm.
Like, things that we have done trying to live forever or trying to make our fields grow better. It's fascinating.
It is, and you talk about that a lot in the first book, too.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why I read your book was because I was talking about bananas a while ago on my show and talked about how... the banana, as we know it, is probably going to disappear because of a virus that's going on. You talked about it in your book. And one of my listeners said, oh, you have to read The Fruit Hunters. So I want to thank my listeners for that. And please keep telling me who I should be following and reading.
Those are good listeners.
But every food, I like to say this, every food has a story. The bananas have a story. And there are so many other foods in your book that have their own crazy, interesting stories. But I just wanted to get a little bit about the difficult things that go on in the world when it has to do with fruits. You talk about how a lot of drugs get into the Western world through fruit.
Yeah, I mean, what an interesting thing that drugs are often sent from Central American companies, countries, by companies that also ship other substances in the fruit crate boxes. And I mean, that's a perfect example of something that you don't, as a reporter, you don't expect to come across that story. You know, you just say, oh, fruits are interesting. There's different fruits that grow in different parts of the world. Like when you went to Costa Rica, you discovered these new fruits. When people go to different countries, they see these things. And that's what started the Fruit Hunters for me. But then as I deepened my research, I kept learning things that were so weird and puzzling. And I guess that brings us into what my editor and I called the dark side of fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a dark side, you know, whether it's the use of fruit shipments to smuggle drugs, or whether it's the use of toxic chemicals in the growing process. And I mean, there's all sorts of things that I didn't expect that I would learn about, and some of them were pretty
not very nice. There are so many different fruits and foods out there. Many of them are already gone, and won't ever come back, and some of them we're destroying, and I imagine there are new ones that are happening all the time. You talk about hybrid fruits that are made. The whole concept of hybridization, it's from dusting pollen from the stamen of one flower onto the pistil of another and then growing out a resultant seed. This is natural in a way. I imagine nature does this slowly, and we speed up the process, and there's a lot of different new foods that have come out as a result. I'm comfortable with that. I'm not as comfortable with going into a chromosome and planting a gene to make new foods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a chapter, I think, that takes place at the Zeiger family farm, Zeiger Genetics in Modesto, California. It's a family-run operation, and they just you know, kind of take bits, male and female flower bits, and kind of push them together,
mm-hmm.
and you know, create little fruit babies and see what happens. And that is what we could call kind of natural selection. I mean, even though it's artificial selection, even though it's humans doing it, it's kind of what birds and bees do. They kind of brush up against flower parts and knock them into each other so that the flower becomes pollinated and gives birth to a fruit baby. So I think that's natural, yeah. I think what they're doing is it's useful and it's fascinating, and it's a great, strange phenomenon. But then, yeah, the laboratories that are, you know, splicing resistant genes, that's a little freakier,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, we don't really know. You know, I spoke to people on both sides of that debate, and, you know, I mean, it really, really rapidly becomes clear that we cannot resolve that. You know, like, our food system is so complicated.
Yes.
We hope we have this sense that, you know, if we just put our minds to it, we'll find solutions and we'll figure it out, and we can have a way that it'll just be all good. And then you kind of start speaking to people and you realize just how complicated and interlocked everything is, and it's just, you kind of run away from it screaming and saying,
yeah,
oh,
well,
man.
We all feel very frustrated because the corporations pretty much have control and make all the decisions and sway our representatives, and it can be really, really frustrating. One of the things is there are foods that I remember when I was young, like watermelons with seeds in them, and they're really hard to find. But I was kind of comforted to read that there are people with all kinds of seeds from foods from long ago, that maybe they're not all lost.
Yes, the preservationists are there. Those are the kind of unsung heroes of the fruit world. They are the real fruit hunters, these passionate amateurs who have collections in their backyards, or even those who work for, some of them work for the United States Department of Agriculture and maintain germplasm repositories. You know, there's a great character, Richard Campbell, and his partner, Norris, in Florida, who have this collection of mangoes, the American government's mango collection. And they're just these two wonderful, intrepid adventurers going around the world in search of germplasm. And these people are so amazing. And with them, you feel that they are telling us something. And what they're telling us is that we're in it together, and that we are part of nature, and that we have a role, and that there are things we can do. And it's a very good story. Their story is a good story.
I like good stories. When you mentioned mangoes, it reminded me in the book of your discussing how nuclear agreements between India and Canada and India and the United States had a lot to do with how many mangoes we saw in our countries.
That's a strange story. And that story, I've been told that story may be in reality a little more nuanced than it's portrayed in the book. I had gone off a few news reports that were maybe a little sensationalist, but the sensationalist version of that story is still probably generally valid. But it kind of gets into the intricacies of global trade and how India bought nuclear reactors from Canada for a while, and throughout that time, America said, "Okay, we're not taking your mangoes. We won't. we won't buy any of your produce. I don't think there's. I mean, maybe there were some things that were coming in, but I don't think so. Like it's kind of interesting how few countries get to export their food into America, at least their fresh food. And so India certainly wasn't able to export its mangoes, but then they signed a kind of business deal with George Bush to buy some nuclear reactors or some form of nuclear technology from America. And I guess this was about 7 years ago now. And part of the deal was that America would allow the mangoes back in. And I think the mangoes needed to be irradiated.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other horrible subject.
Which means they get essentially nuked, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Like there's some nuclear technology that is, you know, killing little insects that may be living in the skin and doing who knows what else. But that's just a weird story of how
yeah. There's a lot of problems with imported food, and one of them is they have to be irradiated to kill those little bugs.
A lot of Central American mangoes that come into America are boiled or given what's called like hot water vapor treatment. Like they're like kind of blasted with hot steam. So they're kind of like cooked a little bit.
Yeah, and I was surprised to hear that, but then not surprised, because now I know why the mangoes don't taste like, the mangoes I get here in the United States don't taste anything like the ones that I get in Costa Rica that have just fallen from the tree. One more little question. You've got, there's a film coming out called The Fruit Hunters, or it came out in Canada, and we should be able to see it sometime here in the United States?
Yeah, it is currently at film festivals, and it just played at the Palm Springs Film Festival, and it's playing at the Berlin Film Festival very soon, and it's going to be coming out, I think, probably in a couple of months. It's a film that has many of the stories that are in the book. It's inspired by the book. It's based on the book, but it's also its own story. It has some characters who are not in the book, and I think it's wonderful.
Adam,
you'll see it soon.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for joining me, and it's all about food. I love this book. Did I say that? I really did, and I hope everybody reads it. It's a great one. Okay, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, of course, and we will be right back with Jill Eckhart from PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Stay tuned. Hello there, I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, and here we are. It's January 29, 2013, and when I was walking up to the studio today, this one young man came up to me, and he started talking and saying, "Do you like children?" And he was obviously trying to fundraise for some children's organization, and my first question back to him was, "Are you a vegan?" And I usually do this to people who are trying to solicit for different organizations, and most of them are really doing great work, but my point asking back is, are you a vegan, is I personally think that when we're eating a plant-based diet, we're doing probably the best thing that we can do for health, environment, and treating all living things on Earth with kindness and compassion. I think it's like a giant step to improving so many different things. Whereas all these other causes out there, they're really important, but when they make a difference, they're taking little steps. Going vegan, eating vegan, living a vegan lifestyle is a giant step towards making this world a better place. Right, right. And you know what? It's fun and it's delicious, and that's what we're going to be talking about right now with Jill Eckhart from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She's the nutrition program manager there. And if you don't know about Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, you should. They are a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting preventative medicine, especially better nutrition and higher standards in research. Welcome to It's All About Food, Jill.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hi. Okay, so let's see. What are we going to get started talking about today? Do you want to tell us about the next 21-day kickstart that's happening?
Sure, I would love to. So our 21-day kickstart, for those of you who are just hearing about this program for the first time, it's a three-week test drive of a vegan diet, and we have everything you'd ever need. All the support you'd ever need, all the videos, recipes, you name it, we have it in this free three-week program. And the next one launches on February 1st. And what's new and different is that we're running these programs monthly. So on the first of every month, you can now find a kickstart. So if you talk to people who want to try out a vegan diet or who just want to dabble a little bit until they're ready to take it on 100%, this is the place to go. It's 21daykickstart.org.
The number is 21daykickstart.org.
That's right.
And you just, register and you're in?
Yeah, you register. We're accepting registration now for February 1st. You register, you get a confirmation, and then we get you started before February 1st. So we give you a shopping list, some ideas for how to clear out your pantry and get yourself ready for 3 weeks of eating vegan and getting healthy. So you'll have everything you need to really give it 100% starting on February 1.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And you get an email each day. And then you can play around in the site. Like I mentioned, we have a three-week menu. We have video recipes. We have nutrition videos. We have a community forum where people can come on and kind of talk to one another, find out where people are coming from, put their questions out there, put their challenges out there. It's a really dynamic site and a lot of fun.
What have been some of the challenges that people talk about during
sure.
this time?
Yeah. Some people who are doing this, maybe on their own, maybe they don't have the family support at the moment. Some people want to know how to manage that. Do they cook for themselves only and cook meat and dairy products for the rest of the family during this process, or just trying to navigate that? That seems to be a big one. And some other people just have trouble with certain types of foods that they're so used to, that many of us, you know, myself included, grew up on eating lots of meat and dairy. So when you're just starting out, you may miss some of the tastes and textures, and so people try to navigate that, like, what should I use instead of cheese, or how to build flavor, so things like that.
The nice thing is that a lot of us have been doing this for a really, really, really long time, longer than probably some of us want to mention, but decades. And fortunately, the commercial world has responded and has made it a lot easier. So for people that are really getting into this now, the recipes are out there, they're delicious, they're easy, They can be sophisticated if you want them to be or not. And there are lots of transition foods and things to get you to where you want to be. There's really no reason not to do it.
Yeah, and it really can be fun. When I made this transition, you know, almost 8 years ago now, I just had so much fun trying new things. I hadn't even had half the vegetables that I eat now. I had never been exposed to them before. So it was really an eye-opening experience for me. And that can be overwhelming to some people, but it was a really exciting challenge to me. Like you said, it is so much easier now. Easier than it's ever been.
You know, we say variety is the spice of life, and I really believe that, and it's really nice to have a variety with our food, and yet most people really are eating the same things all the time, and some of that is somewhat forced upon us because the industries that provide our food have really limited the choices because they want a monocrop, they want to make things easier for themselves, so they make a lot of the same things. We've lost a lot of diversity in our fruits and vegetables, but most people are eating a very simple, just meat and potatoes kind of diet. And even though there's less diversity when you go to eating plant foods, there is so much more variety than if you're focusing on animal foods.
Absolutely.
And it really is incredible. You know, I was just talking to someone in the first segment about fruits, and if you go all around the world, there's just hundreds of thousands of fruits that you've never experienced. But even just in the supermarket today, I like to tell people just every week or so, pick up something you've never bought before and find out about it and try it.
Yeah, and tucked in the produce section, the fruit and produce section of every grocery store is a hidden little book, and it's usually on a stand, and you flip through it and you can look at the dozens and dozens of varieties of apples and the, you know, dozens of varieties of all the fruits and vegetables. And if you have a recipe that is new to you and you don't know what ginger looks like, for instance, or if you don't know what jicama looks like, you can look through this book and get familiar with it. It really is hidden in every produce section. But it is fun to experiment and try new things.
Yeah, I like it when I'm always buying greens in the produce section. I'm big with kale and chard and collards, and I'll be happily putting my greens in the bag, and somebody will come up and say, "What do you do with that?" I love that.
Yeah. There's always teaching moments in the grocery store, for
now,
sure.
Now, what was it for you? You said you became vegan 8 years ago. Why did you do that?
Well, I met a vegan, and I did not know what that meant.
Yes, an alien from the planet Vega. I am vegan.
I knew it meant that this person only ate X, Y, and Z, but I didn't really know any more than that. And I read Diet for New America, and I was in the profession of helping people. I was in the profession of helping people with, getting their life back together from being on the street and things like that, people who were homeless. And so I had a heart for helping people kind of going into this and then learning about a vegan diet and what it can do for your health. And by reading Diet for New America, you learn what it can do for everything, the environment, animals, what the meat and dairy industry is up to. And so for all of those things that I read in the book, I just was totally sold, and I had the support at home, and I just did it and haven't looked back. It's been an exciting journey.
What's amazing is that book, Diet for New America, is 25 years old. It was written in 1987.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah. And a lot of it is still true, if not more so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so we got the Super Bowl coming up in a few days. I have to confess that I'm not a sports fan, but I am a food fan. And any kind of food, any kind of holiday or opportunity to celebrate food sounds good to me.
Absolutely. This is a great opportunity to introduce people who aren't eating a plant-based diet or a vegan diet to some healthy, delicious foods.
And, yeah. So you sent me a bunch of recipes, and I thought we might talk about some of them because they look pretty good and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so when people are sitting around watching sports, they're typically, consuming a lot of chips and dips and beer and ribs on the couch.
Finger food. Some people are really into the games, and they're stressed out, and they're really attached to who's going to win. So, you know, you want things people can nibble on quickly, and nothing that's going to take them away from the TV too long to assemble. So really easy things. Like, we have a wonderful recipe for guacamole, and we call it mock-a-mole because it's a low-fat guacamole. And it's just really delicious, and we're pulling out some of the avocado, which makes guacamole traditionally quite high in fat, and we're subbing in some peas, green peas. And so we're bringing down the fat, bringing up the fiber, and it's a really, really delicious dish.
So you could eat a lot more of it.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
But then the fiber will probably fill you up, so you don't want to eat anymore.
That's the best thing about eating a plant-based diet, is you get full faster because you're eating lots and lots of fiber, which is so crucial for your health.
Now, another recipe I noticed, that I was amused because we just posted the same recipe on our website yesterday, responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's my nonprofit website. And we do this all the time, and that is making our own corn chips.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that today is National Corn Chip Day?
I had no idea.
Yeah, so yesterday we posted this corn chip recipe, and it's the exact same recipe that you have, where you take corn tortillas and you cut them up and basically toast them in the oven. This is a genius recipe, and I'm so glad that you have it, too. And what's great about it is, number one, your tortilla chips taste fresh and warm, and they're not full of oil. And the kind of tortillas I get are salt-free, and they're the best kind that you can get.
Yeah, these are really good. I love to throw a little bit of chili powder on there, just to do something a little different, give it a little bit of taste. And one thing I love about this recipe is that it's much cheaper than buying a bag of corn chips. So I like that, too, that, you know, this is a very economical choice.
Right, I didn't think about that. But you have to be careful because you have to read the ingredients on the tortillas that you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
There are not all tortillas are the same, and some are better than others. You know, in some corn tortillas, they use all kinds of crazy ingredients like cellulose from wood pulp. And although that's nice fiber, I really prefer my tortillas just to have corn in them and not much else.
I think that's a really good point that you're making. Actually, one time I was taking a group of people on a grocery store tour, and we were going through the tortillas, and they aren't all created equal.
Mm-mm.
In fact, we found a bag of tortillas that had fish oil added in them.
Oh.
And while it's very easy, you can find some that don't, someone in the group had an allergy to fish.
Sure.
And she wouldn't have even thought to try to be aware of that. So it's really important to get used to reading labels. And
well, I was surprised once, and I haven't bought a bag of chips in a very, 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 very underlined very long time. But once when I did buy chips, there were some blue corn chips that were out there that actually had, I think, whey protein or some kind of dairy product in them, which was very disturbing because when you're a vegan and you don't want to eat dairy, or some people have issues with dairy, to have that secretly buried in a harmless-looking corn chip was very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really read the ingredients.
Yeah, definitely. And this low-fat guacamole and the oven-baked tortilla chips, we've served this time and time again to so many different groups here at PCRM when we're doing cooking demonstrations and going downtown to employers and doing lunch and learns. People just love this recipe. They love the low-fat guacamole.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good one.
And black bean dip, your recipe, how much easier can that get?
This is really cooking for dummies, 101.
Or you know what? It's cooking for smarties.
Exactly.
But, you know, you have to be smart to figure out that this is good for you and delicious.
Yes, indeed. So it's literally a can of black beans And I like to get the best black beans I can. So, you know, it depends on which store you're shopping at, but if you can get a low sodium version and give it a good rinse, add that to a cup of salsa and a half a teaspoon of cumin. Blend it up either in your food processor or your blender, and that's it. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. And very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely. You're talking about less than $2 to serve, you know, five or seven people finger foods.
Right. Let's see. Anything else good in that list of recipes you sent me?
Well, one other finger food fun thing is air-popped popcorn. It's easy to make, and people think, oh, it's kind of plain, but there are some ways that you can really spice it up. Some of my favorites are smoked paprika, which is really delicious, curry powder, or nutritional yeast, which tastes a little cheesy and adds a nice flavor to it. So I love having air-popped popcorn.
You know, people are really into convenience. I have a different view on convenience and what's easy and what isn't, but I really don't understand buying popcorn in a big plastic bag. There's nothing fun about that. And, you know, I can understand going to the movies and buying a bag of popcorn because at least at the movie theaters, they pop it fresh. But the thing about popcorn is you want it popped fresh. And an air popper is just a great thing to have. It's inexpensive, it's easy, it's fun, and your popcorn is fresh and lovely, warm, great mouthfeel, and you just mix it up with different flavorings. It's fabulous.
Yeah, definitely. And something fun if you are, you know, anticipating a big group of people, you could bag it up in advance and have different flavors and just let people pick. It's a great thing for people, like a party favor, too. So there's a lot of fun things you can do with popcorn. It's so cheap to make.
You know, I was at an event recently with presentations by the staff at PCRM. It was such an impressive event, and there are really so many wonderful things going on at PCRM. One of the things I was really impressed with was the 21-day Kickstart now is in several different languages.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We've expanded now to have a totally Mandarin program, and we take it even a step further. So it's not just in Mandarin, but it's in traditional and simplified characters. So that's been really exciting. We've garnered about almost 10,000 people participating in a few of the launches we've done, and we also have a program in Spanish, which launches again February 1st. So if anyone knows anyone who would like to participate in a totally Spanish language program with culturally specific menus, that runs on February 1st.
Now, is that also a 21-day Kickstart?
Yeah.
The same website, you can choose the language that you want.
That's right. Yep,
That's really spectacular because, you know, I've been preaching the plant-based food thing for a very long time, and the Spanish language support for plant-based foods is really pretty limited, and it's great that you have that.
Yeah, it's a really exciting program to offer, and we've gotten a lot of people very interested in it.
Can you talk a little bit about, I don't know if you're that familiar with, but you have this Food for Life program, and I was just curious if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The Food for Life program is set up in a way that we have people who are interested in teaching about a plant-based diet come and train with us, and they learn our curriculum, and they learn how to market themselves and how to teach people to follow a vegan diet. And so people come and train with us, and then they go back and teach in their community. And we have trainings at least twice a year. We have one coming up in June, and I'm glad you asked because we are actually accepting applications right now for people who are interested in becoming instructors. And we have five different curriculums, so you can teach cancer prevention and survival, you can teach a curriculum on diabetes, a curriculum for kids, a general weight loss curriculum. So we have a lot of options for people. And we also have an employee wellness program that launched with the Food for Life program as well. So It's a really fun way to make a little bit of money and really have your passion line up with what you're doing every day.
Right. That sounds good. We're going to talk more about that on another program in February when we have another PCRM person. Joseph Gonzalez is going to give us more information on that whole food
Wonderful.
For life thing. So I just wanted to give a little preview to that. So we just have 4 or 5 minutes left, and I wanted to get just maybe a little bit more into detail on the 21-day kickstart. So people can go to the website. You have what are some of the specific things that the videos that people might learn? Because, you know, I'm always saying get back into your kitchen. Find your kitchen. Because people are afraid to prepare their own food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some of the videos, we try to take people from really the very beginning. So, you know, how do you substitute in for eggs? What are we going to use instead of dairy? So very basic things like that. Then we build upon that. We help people learn, you know, well, maybe they've noticed after a few days, geez, why isn't there any olive oil in these recipes? Or I don't notice, why is this such a low-fat program? I didn't know that this program was going to be low-fat. So we tell them all about the benefits of eating a low-fat diet and what that can do to prevent cancer risk, obesity, and cardiovascular disease. And then we take them to complete nutrition. So are you going to be getting, how do you get your calcium? And what about B12 and things like that? And what about iron? So we have a video on that. We talk a little bit about the glycemic index, which might be new to a lot of people, especially people who aren't concerned about blood sugar or maybe don't have diabetes. So, and then we have some cooking demonstrations that I do and some of our other Food for Life instructors are doing to help people get a little bit more familiar with putting together some of these recipes. I always find that if I see someone doing it, it makes it so much easier for me to do it in my own kitchen.
Well, the thing is that most media, mainstream media today, is very confusing, and little sound bites come out on the news and people get all excited about it. And that's how we get, quote, educated about nutrition. And then there are these buzzwords, protein, calcium, omega-3 fatty acids, and people have no idea what they are. And, you know, I don't think people do need to know what they are. If they're eating whole plant foods and they're buying and using most of the food from the produce section, a vast array of colors, they're probably going to be doing pretty well. But in this world of lots of information, I think people will feel more comfortable if they have basic information to support moving and changing the diet to let them know that they're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. I think that's perfectly stated. We recommend, our power plate, but really it's just eating from, you know, fruits and vegetables, whole grains and beans and legumes. And we do tell people, you know, don't worry about the specifics of how much protein you're getting or how much this and that. Just eat as much as you want of these groups and plenty of color, plenty of variety. And if you're eating enough calories, you'll be getting what you need. So I think that's perfectly said. I think people do overthink it, but it is helpful to have the supporting information. So we have all that they want and more. So if people really want to get into it and learn the nitty gritty, they can do that too.
I just wanted to repeat one thing you said, eat as much as you want from certain food groups. I mean, how liberating is that? Eat as much as you want. But you
Absolutely.
Can with plant foods. Jill, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food, and I look forward to having you back in March when we're going to talk about some processed meats and how wonderful or not they are. And I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's my website. And have a delicious week.